The opinions expressed by the host of this program don't necessarily reflect those of Bold Gold Media Group, Thunder 102, its management, staff, and sponsors.
Welcome to Curley's Commentary. I'm your host, Steve Curlander, and we have a great show for you tonight. I'm going to be discussing a number of law enforcement issues in Sullivan County with Sullivan County Sheriff Mike Schiff and Undersheriff Eric Chabote. First, we'll be speaking with Monticello Trustee Larissa Bennett, who's been a center of discussion in the continuing saga in the village of Monticello. But before we begin and bring on our guests, I wanted to welcome two new sponsors to our Curley Commentary Show, the Roscoe Beer Company and the Sullivan Regency, both very exciting new businesses in the Catskills. I don't have to tell you, it's January, traditionally the slowest time of the year business-wise in the Catskills. And on top of it, it's been a good old-fashioned Sullivan County winter. It's been pretty hard with its Arctic cold and snow. So it's easy right now to feel a little depressed about living and working here. I call it the Sullivan County blues. What you have to keep in mind is that we've turned a corner toward better times here. And these two sponsors, a microbrewery and a luxury real estate complex in Monticello, show that. I want to thank them for supporting me in the radio show and ask you to stock your refrigerator with Roscoe beer and turn all your friends on to the new Sullivan Regency in Monticello, which will hold its grand opening in the near future. Maybe you could tell them to come here and live and spend the weekends in this new exciting real estate project. Now, I want to introduce Larissa Bennett, who I consider one of the young, bright politicians on the Sullivan County scene at this point. She's in her first term as councilman in the village of Monticello. Welcome, Larissa. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, you are the trustee in the village and the former vice mayor, right?
Yes, the girl formerly known as the deputy mayor.
Deputy mayor, yes. Larissa, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do? Where do you live? What brought you back to Monticello and Sullivan County?
I was born and I was raised in Monticello. I joined politics to make a difference in my community. You know, I seen the stagnant in how things were, so I wanted to make a change. I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to bring a positive light to the village.
So you're in your first term right now, right?
Yes.
How many years has it been since you've been on the board?
I've been on the board for 2 years.
Okay. What's your day job, by the way? Let's tell the audience a little bit what you do.
My day job, I work at Hudson Health Plan. I am a facilitated enroller. Right now, we're doing applications under the Affordable Care Act through the marketplace. So I'm assisting people in the community every day, making sure that they get the insurance that they need for their families.
Now, compared to what we've heard on about the national website, it's been pretty easy to get onto the state side, right?
For the most part.
Okay, and so what made it then your commitment? I mean, who approached you? How did you get involved?
I was approached several times and I declined. I just seen the chaos that was going on and I chose not to be a part of it. And then one day I just said to myself, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So I felt obligated to step out and make a difference.
So you ran for office. You ran by a pretty good number too, right?
Yes.
And you originally ran on the same platform with Mayor Jenkins, who's now pretty embattled.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, did you start off having a good relationship with him?
Yes, I did.
Have you seen, like, you know, one thing I've noticed, you know, I've only been back about a year.
Okay.
But when I first started, I was a county legislator and I worked with Gordon, you know, even before he became mayor. And, you know, I've had this discussion with him. He seems to have changed a little. I mean, a lot, actually. I mean, he doesn't seem to be the same Gordon Jenkins that, you know, I started politics with.
No, there's been a drastic change. And, you know, it's a little upsetting and discouraging. I still like him as a person, but sitting on the board, I've become conflicted with his ideas and some of the ideas of my own, or just being able to express the needs of the village.
Can you give us an example? I mean, what is something that he's not addressing that you feel needs to be addressed at this point? Because he says he's doing a great job.
He does. Sitting on the board, he does not communicate well with the other board members.
Does he communicate at all?
He communicates with some board members,
mm-hmm.
not all of them. It appears to me that if you have a difference of opinion or if you have a suggestion that he does not agree with, then he will oust you. So it makes it hard to, it makes it hard for me to do my job effectively if you're not giving me the information that I need. Right, wrong, or indifferent, I just want the information so that I can better serve the community and make precise decisions. But if you're not giving me the information and then we're in a board meeting and you're calling it for a vote, how can I effectively vote?
So that's a, the communications is a major problem. I mean, he doesn't communicate with people he doesn't agree with or doesn't want to talk to.
Right. I just want the option to respectively agree or disagree.
Well, that's what it should be all about. You know, once,
yes.
You know, I mean, if you don't agree with a policy, that shouldn't affect the personal relationship. I mean,
or if I have a question about it, or I may have another avenue or another outlet to how we can solve a problem or a solution, but your way is not the only way.
Well, you know, Marcel's been rocked with various scandals over the last year or two involving Mayor Jenkins. You have the tearing down of the old Justice Court that turned out to be a fiasco. Now we have a pile of asbestos-ridden debris sitting there every day waiting for the DEC to do something. You had his DWI arrest. I mean, it just goes on and on. It gets worse and worse. And I mean, how you do you see any end to it?
That's an interesting question.
Well, you have to. You know, you have a you had all the parties unite recently and endorsed two candidates under the two candidates plus Judge Finn, two new candidates, Doug Solomon, who's the former police chief, and Jill Kenney, who's a planning assistant planning commissioner, and so there's been a move politically to try to get some different people on that board to try to straighten things out. Let's say they both get elected. You see that happening?
I do see that happening. I know that Jill is very smart. Doug is someone who served in the community, who knows the community very well. And who can also talk and discuss things objectively. I've spoken to both of them. I think that they're great people.
Now the latest chapter is the premature release by Carmen Rue. Trustee Carmen Rue just can't stand Mayor Jenkins of a preliminary audit done by the state controller's office, right?
Right.
And that report said things are really messed up in the village, right?
Well, it shows that there was mismanagement of funds. Prior to that report, as you know, Carmen and myself have asked the mayor to step down out of the manager position. And there's nothing personal with that. We just felt that he wasn't capable of doing the job and the task at hand. Maybe he got a little overwhelmed, or maybe the ways that he's trying or the advice that he's received isn't working.
Well, again, is he working through the regular channels of government to take actions like that Justice Court? Did you know it was being torn down?
We talked about it in the past, but there was nothing set in stone. So there was no resolution resolving the fact that it was going to be torn down on that day.
Okay, and this audit report, I mean, it's pretty damning. You know, I have to preface that by saying that The state controller's office goes into all government entities, you know, here in Sullivan County and elsewhere, and they always have to find something wrong.
Of course.
It's not like, you know, government is doing a good job. If they're doing a great job, they still find something wrong. You know, premised on that, I mean, they found a lot wrong. And the thing that I have to ask you about, they had asked you not to release this preliminary report, right, until you were able to give some reaction to it. That's a standard operating procedure.
Yes.
Right. And Carmen released it anyway on our website. Do you think that's done any damage in terms of you think the controller's office is going to come down heavier on the village now?
Well, we were told that some of the wording in the report was going to change. However, the numbers didn't. And although I can't justify her actions for doing what she did, I chose not to say anything until the finalized report came out.
Now, one of the problems with this type of report, it holds the entire board responsible, right?
Yes.
And you know, that's one reason I had you on the show, because you know I don't think it's fair that you know the mismanagement, which you have not you know known about or gone along with, is being. You know, I think that was Carmen's prerogative in releasing the report in terms of trying to show that, you know, this is not our fault.
Right. I mean, I do understand why she did it, but at the end of the day, we're all being held responsible, and it's not fair because how can I be accountable for something that I had no control over or something that I couldn't stop or prevent? Things were done in a manner, this is my way, this is how I'm going to do it, and it was done. So some of the incidents that were in there, we found out about the report, we found out in the report or after the fact that they were done, and yet it still falls on my shoulders. So that does bring a nervous concern.
This is Curly's commentary on Thunder 102, and right now we're speaking with Larissa Bennett, a councilwoman in the village of Monticello, and we're talking about how she's reacting and how she's dealing with being a trustee on a very embattled board with a very embattled mayor. Let's say you became mayor of Monticello in the next few days. What action do you think should be taken to start rectifying these big problems that are facing the village? First of all, do you think the village should be dissolved?
No, I don't.
I agree with you. I think, you know, the history of Monticello and the ability of Monticello to control its own destiny is still very important and should be preserved.
I agree with you. The village of Monticello is, I consider, the heart of Sullivan County. I mean, everything pretty much goes through the village of Monticello. So to dissolve the board and to dissolve the heart, I think that would leave a bad taste in everyone's mouth. But
it would leave a big hole.
And it would leave a big hole in the county.
You know, One thing is when I came back home and I, you know, I drove to Kamisha Lake and I saw no Concord Hotel there for the first time. I think that's, you know, that would symbolize what has happened to the village of Monticello to a large extent. You know, that entity alone really tore apart the village to begin with. Mm-hmm. You know, economically, I mean, it supported a lot of businesses there. And, you know, I think in terms of politically, you know, it's still the county seat. It's still the crossroads. It's nicknamed the crossroads of the Catskills. And I think it still can be fixed, right?
Yes.
So what would you do? Tough question, right?
That is a tough question. There's so many different things that need to be done. There's a few small changes that I think would make a impact or a major difference. Starting with the board, I think that we have to find a way to learn to communicate. We don't have to like each other at the end of the day. We don't have to respect each other at the end of the day. But when we're together, we need to give each other the opportunity to express ourselves and to bring our interests at heart so that, and just remember at the end of the day, we're not there for ourselves. We're not there for our egos, personal opinions, or who's going to be louder in a shouting match. We're there to serve the residents of the village.
Okay, so let's talk about economic development. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, Broadway is pretty much empty of stores at this point.
It is.
You know, there seems to have been a flight of business from the county county seat. There's only a few landlords that really own many of the buildings at this point. Mm-hmm. Do you think that approaching them? Is there any grant writing going on? Is there any Main Street development going on? You think that's a need at this point?
I know in the past there was a grant to where if people wanted, the village was trying to support businesses to come back to Broadway, back into the community, and they were offered free rent for a year. So the first year of their business is the hardest year. You don't know if it's, you know, if your revenue is going to go up, if it's going to go down.
Is that still available? That sounds too good to be true.
I don't think that offer is on the table. However, you were supposed to be there for 5 years. So okay. The first year was free, and then you pretty much supported yourself for the next 5 years.
I look at the Village of Liberty at this point and compare mm-hmm. to the Village of Monticello.
Right.
The Village of Liberty is light years away ahead of the village to the point where I think it may affect the casino selection. And I think that's a major issue that no one's really talking about, is that dysfunction in the village could affect the casino selection later, you know, in terms of either the Concord site or the Bridgeville site. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, I think that needs to be, you know, the sooner the better that somebody, I think somebody needs to come in from the state at this point. Or... do something. I mean, you know, it's fine for them to audit you and say, you know, there's terrible things, but what can the village do at this point? As long as he's there and he's elected and he's in office, you can't remove him.
The first thing we need to do is to hire a village manager, someone who knows about
a professional
exactly.
Bureaucrat, right?
Yes.
Someone who's gone to school and learned public administration.
Yes.
Okay. And you got to pay him for that too. You got to get somebody, you know, you can't pay $30,000 for a village manager. You're not going to get anybody, right?
We do understand that. And okay. With the damage that has been done, we do understand that we will have to compensate someone to fill that position and to fill those shoes. So there's a few board members that are willing to do that.
So let me ask you this. How important is this village election coming up in March?
This village election is very important. And I think that depending on which candidates are elected, that could make or break everything. If the wrong candidates are elected, the village will continue to go in the stray that it's currently in. However, if we do get the right candidates in, we'll be able to turn things around.
Okay. What do you think? There'll be a large turnout this time? You think people are going to come out to vote that haven't voted before?
Yes.
Now, there's a, you know, I hear rumors that the mayor is registering, mayor and his G-Man team are registering a lot of voters, that the registrations may be questionable. Have you heard anything about that?
I just try to stay away from the negativity. I think the most important thing is for people to actually go out to the polls and vote. Pull the lever and make sure that your vote counts.
And you think the two fusion candidates are the ones to vote for, right?
I am supporting Monticello United, yes.
Okay. And what would you tell people in the village in terms of voting for them? Why should they vote for them? Do you think that you'll work with them then if they're elected? Do you mean there will be a 3-2 or 4-1 vote at that point? You think that'll help start turning things around?
Yes, I do.
Okay. This is Steve Curlander. You're listening to Curly's Commentary, and we're going to be taking a break.
Hi, I'm Michelle Samarano on the next Ciliberto and Friends. Barry Lewis from the Times Herald Record joins us on Thunderline. We'll find out what's coming up in Barry's column this coming weekend here in Thunder Country. And Daniel Gable, Sullivan County Area Farmers Markets, will join us on the Thunderline for our Sullivan County Farmers Markets update. And Ciliberto, well, since he's been back, he's been getting on my last nerve. So on the next Ciliberto and Friends, I'm going to pay him back by getting on his last nerve. Well, that won't be hard.
Ciliberto and Friends, weekday mornings on Lightning Hot Country. Lightning Hot Country. Thunder 102. Thunder 102. Thunder 102.
Gotta be there on time. Don't know what to do.
Call a yellow cab.
Say what?
They'll get you through.
Yellow cab. Cause everything else is just a taxi.
Hi, this is Alan Keston of Yellow Cab in Monticello. If you rely on cabs every day to go to work, I want to tell you about the best deal in town. How about free? That's right, free. Become a member of our Yellow Cab Frequent Rider program, and after every 10 rides, you'll get a free ride, and it's free to join. If you work at Catskill Regional Medical Center, the Center for Discovery, Monticello Casino and Raceway, or just tell us where you work, join the club and show us your work ID and get $1 off your rides to and from work, plus a free ride after every 10 rides. Call us at 794-4040 or 794-7777.
Yellow Cab, because everything else is just a taxi.
Hi, this is Jack Bodolowski from the Animal Hospital of Sullivan County. My wife, Dr. Barbara Bodolowski, and I care about your pets as much as you do. That is why we have created two programs that will help you afford the proper care for your pets. With the WeCare program, we can customize your pet's individual wellness care and finance it over a year. Then, with the Perker Points Loyalty Rewards program, the more you care for your pet, the more points you earn towards future products and services such as dentals, nail trim, preventative care, sick exams, rabies vaccine, vaccines, and much, much more. The Animal Hospital of Sullivan County on Harris Road in Ferndale is open weekly, Monday through Saturday. Plus, for any veterans, please present your favor card, good for 10% off services. For more information, call us at 845-292-6711 or visit us at ahofsc.com. The Animal Hospital of Sullivan County, we care about your pet. Have a pet-tastic day.
Lightning Hot Country. Thunder 102.
The opinions expressed by the host of this program don't necessarily reflect those of Bold Gold Media Group, Thunder 102, its management, staff, and sponsors.
Welcome back to Curly's Commentary on Thunder 102. I'm Steve Curlander. And before we continue our discussion with our sheriff and undersheriff, I'd like to thank my other sponsors for the show tonight, Animal Hospital, Chris Company, Yellow Cab, and Thompson Sanitation. I ask that you patronize them. All these are great Sullivan County businesses. They are run by creative entrepreneurs who are basically role models for other business people. I would ask you to recognize their contributions to our economy and to our community at large. All of them are great benefactors to various local causes and groups, and we should thank them all the time for that. And I want to thank them now for sponsoring the show tonight. Now I'm going to welcome Sheriff Mike Schiff and Undersheriff Eric Chabote. How are you guys?
Good.
Okay.
Just okay? I thought you had dinner.
We're here.
Oh, you're here. Okay. We are going to discuss a little bit about law enforcement in Sullivan County tonight. There's some issues that are recently been talked about in the news. One's the building of the jail. The other is the manpower at the sheriff's department. And let's start off with the jail. What's the latest? You guys had meetings. I think it was yesterday. Or
Yes, they've been having ongoing meetings. They had a company by the name of Goldberg and Associates make a pitch for the contract to do the jail. Said they could save us $30 or $40 million. We're currently in the process of them making plans, blueprints, whatever you want to call it, trying to figure out if they can do this cheaper than the company that we are currently doing business with, Labella.
Let's give a little background to viewers that may not be familiar with the situation. Right now, how old is the jail in Monticello?
Parts of it are just over 100 years old.
So it's one of the oldest jails in the state, right?
Correct. I think Greene County thinks they got us by 6 months, but that's up for debate. I'm not sure.
So, you know, people were being hung in Sullivan County when it was built, basically.
Oh, way past that was built. That was not that uncommon in Sullivan County.
So,
but when I got elected, we put an end to that.
Yeah, we still have some hanging judges, though. The jail itself at this point is it's in a tough situation physically, right?
Yes, parts of it are extremely worn. One section did get closed down by the Correction Commission. They didn't feel it was safe.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know when or if how that'll follow through, whether other sections of the jail will be closed. A lot of our stuff doesn't meet the current standards for the Correction Commission, what's required of a jail.
And this is nothing new. I mean, the past legislators knew this, right? I mean, this has been on the table for a number of years, right?
I believe this first came up around 88. Know, Eric?
Yeah, with the Board of Supervisors. I mean, I know when I was a legislator, we were talking about building a new jail at that point.
Yeah, and this has been an ongoing process since then.
Mm-hmm.
I think it came to light just before I got elected that they were starting to farm out inmates, and it became very expensive to pay to send inmates to other jails and to maintain our jail. And they started looking at the process a little more seriously. Plus, I think the commission was pushing them very hard and saying at some point you have to make a move here and do something.
So it's basically a matter of expense at this point, right? I mean, is that the chief concern here or of the legislators? I mean, in terms of how they're reviewing the process and how they're reviewing it?
Pretty much, I would have to say it's the expense. It's a very expensive project. Probably the largest capital project our county would have done up until now, and can't speak for the future. But they're trying to keep costs down. They're looking for cheaper, more efficient ways to do the building.
I'm sure the technology, I mean, they build them, they basically use pods at this point, right? I mean, it's not like it's brick and mortar. It's more of a modular type of thing, right?
Parts of it can be. It doesn't have to be. The pod system isn't necessarily modular. It's a structural design on how you supervise the inmates. Instead of having a linear jail like ours where you have cell blocks where you don't have everybody in your line of sight. You have to walk around that block continually, and we have them clocking in to make sure that every 15 minutes, I believe it is, some of it's half hour, where they have to make their rounds, clock in, and again, to see these people and make sure they're okay, that they're not trying to do harm to themselves, they're not up to no good, you have to do that. With the pod system, you've got every cell on one wall where you can look at them all the time and keep an eye on them, and it's just easier supervision.
There's also probably cameras and stuff in the new
There should be, absolutely.
So that's all up to what you... totally modern. Can the county make money on a new jail?
I wouldn't say make money, but if we have cells left over after building a jail, we can certainly board inmates in, and that would offset the cost.
How much does it cost to board out an inmate at this point?
Orange is the most expensive, but the closest. So you pay more for the bed, but you save on the transportation costs. I believe they're $125.
A day.
Like when you get up
like
to Delaware.
Hilton, right?
I'm sorry.
It's like the Hilton rates.
Yeah, only Jay Leno made a joke about that you could put them up at the Hilton cheaper.
Yeah.
But it's a difficult situation. The other jails around are cheaper. They're around $85, but the distance for transport is quite a bit more.
Now, I got a call.
And there's one more piece to that. Talk about the regional jails and that we should ship everybody out. There have been times where we couldn't get any beds in Orange, Delaware, Chenango, Chemung, and we were up in Rensselaer County with inmates to find a bed. You know, they make it sound like, well, just send them somewhere and get a bed. Beds aren't always available. They're at a premium right now.
There's certain times, I remember at certain times of year, the jail was busier. Like the summers were, always, you know, the hotels were always busier. Is that still true, or is it more of an even type of situation 12 months a year at this point?
I think it's a little steadier. This year, we've been busy right on through. This year, we got hammered on farming out inmates, and the cost with the transport, the total cost with transport and housing is probably going to be somewhere up around $1 million.
That probably ate up some of your overtime, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Most of the transport has to be done on overtime. The staffing that the Correction Commission gives us, the mandatory staffing, those people have to be in positions in the jail. They don't staff you for transport.
So basically, you're dealing with a lot of mandates, too, right?
Yes.
And a new jail would help you deal with those mandates, right?
Correct. A new design would be more efficient. If we built a new jail, there'd be a tremendous saving in manpower costs, personnel costs, because we would need a lot less deputies. So health insurance, retirement, salary, all those costs go up every year. And the conservative estimate from the controller's office and from the Correction Commission was about a $2 million a year savings. So if the jail is built correctly, that $2 million hopefully would be realized, and that could offset some of the jail costs.
You know, I got a call from somebody from Fallsburg today, and it just happened to be on the subject, and he was asking me, how come they're not using the Woodburn Annex as a jail? How come they're not considering that? I mean, I can't, you know, first of all, the Annex was a minimum security prison. So I'm sure that doesn't conform with what you need.
Well, Steve, prior to that, it was a hotel.
Right. Yeah, I grew up down the street, so I mean.
Yeah, it was a hotel. It was a minimum security facility. It was a camp where you put minimum security inmates. In fact, the fence is barely 5 feet tall. When I was a trooper, we used to get inmates. We used to catch inmates from that facility buying beer at Stewart's. You catch them over there in their green prison uniform buying beer, trying to sneak back before they got caught.
They have the milk cards, too? They have them punched?
Yeah, I think they had a milk cart, too, to get punched every time they bought it. But no, seriously, it's a minimum security facility. Every county jail in the state must be a max.
Right.
Why is that? Because you're housing from the lowest level DWI offender to murderers. So every county jail is a maximum. That has to be the design. And Woodburn Annex was built in the early 90s because it was a housing crisis, per se, in corrections. Then Governor Mario Cuomo had to hurry up and find extra space for inmates. In fact, there was a famous picture of a sheriff coming down from upstate to the downstate facility and just handcuffing an inmate to the fence and leaving because he was overcrowded, and the state was dragging their feet, taking inmates. So what they did was they built a bunch of facilities like that to take the overflow. That facility in particular was built with UDC bonds, Urban Development Corporation bonds, mm-hmm. and those bonds have not been paid off. there's still money owed on them. So there's a logistical problem about transferring that property to the county. Our assemblywoman.
Plus, it's in the middle of nowhere, too. I mean, it's not near any courts. It's not near.
Well, that's an issue, too. But our assemblywoman, Aileen Gunther, investigated a few years ago and found that there was a problem transferring the property. But also, it was set up as a minimum security facility. So basically, you'd have to spend the money anyway to build a max facility on that property. And it's on a hillside. So now it would have to be redesigned, et cetera, et cetera. But mm-hmm. yes, to address your point that you made. Most of our work is in the Monticello area. County court, family court, village of Monticello court, town of Thompson court. Those are the main courts. And then the secondary courts are Liberty, Fallsburg, Mamikating, and then all the other little courts around the county. So our work is concentrated in the Monticello area. You put us at the other end of the county, now you have a transport problem. And imagine trying to get down 42 on a Friday afternoon with a van load of prisoners. I mean, it logistically, it doesn't make sense. You should be right at the epicenter of where your work is.
And there is a site already, right? They spent like $2-3 million to buy a site off near Route 7.
$2 million, right by exit 104.
Okay, and is that ready to go? I mean, what's the next step? I mean, they're going to review this new proposal.
Well, some of the legislators want to look at the annex site out there in Fallsburg, and there are additional problems with that. The dormitories would be really of no use to us. We'd have to build a completely new jail behind it. We don't have the kind of inmates that we would have that volume for a dormitory. If we use it for something else, we would have to modify those buildings. Really, the big savings of going there would be water and sewer is more readily available. It would be a little cheaper to do that.
Okay.
But in addition to transporting inmates, eventually the sheriff's office should be together, the road patrol and the jail. That should be a headquarters that is combined. It's easier for administrative oversight. If you're putting your road patrol on the Ulster County border, basically, you're starting off behind the eight ball. If you have to respond out to Fremont, Calicoon, Tustin, Highland, Lumberland, Bethel, you're starting off from a premise that you're nowhere near your work. Monticello, we're not there because it's the county seat. We're there because it's almost the center of the county. Okay. And you're near 17 where you can respond quickly. You got main corridors. You've got 17B, 17, 42, 52. You can respond very quickly to get where you need to go anywhere in the county. If you move everything over to the far side of the county, it's problematic.
So is this issue?
Steve, I just want to say a lot of people don't realize also at the Sullivan Annex, there's no kitchen there. Some of the buildings.
You have to feed the prisoners too, right?
Yes, you do. Okay. And the main building there has mold on the second floor. So all those buildings are going to have to get knocked down and you're going to have to build anyway. You're going to wind up building a facility anyway. And again, because the landscape is sloped, now you have to redesign it. It won't be a flat type of thing. You'll have to build into a hillside. So, I mean, you really, at the end of the day, you're not saving any money and it's really operationally, it's out of the way.
Okay, we're going to take a break. This is Steve Curlander, and we're talking law enforcement on Curley's Commentary. Be right back.
Here's what people are saying about Lightning Hot Country, Thunder 102.
I don't know what you guys have done, but it just sounds better. The other station's morning shows are so negative.
Thank you, Thunderheads.
Discovery is in your hands. Radio Bold.
Get the app
for iPhone and Android. Radio without borders.
It's a jungle out there when you're trying to find the best printer for your proper business image. Everyone wants the image of their business to be exciting, sharp, clear, appealing. Lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my. Gene or Ryan at Crist Company in Monticello and Kyocera can lead you out of that jungle. Kyocera printers from Crist Company will provide the proper type of image for your business each and every time, whether it's in black and white or in vivid color. Kyocera is the best when it comes to affordable cost per copy printing. Crist Company can conquer any Microsoft Network challenge to connect your new printer so that you'll get your reports out fast and efficiently. Call Gene or Ryan at Crist Company, 845-794-6639, or visit crist.com for the best Kyocera printers at a great price. They can also work magic with financing. Call 845-794-6639 or visit crist.com. Crist Company, your business image will never lose. look better.
Fall cleanup project? Call the experts at Thompson Sanitation. Whether you're a contractor or homeowner, Thompson Sanitation offers roll-off and dumpster services for delivery in Sullivan County and surrounding areas. Call Thompson Sanitation for your next job, big or small, from cleanups to remodeling, demolition, or roofing jobs. Thompson Sanitation will deliver your container in 10, 20, or 30 cubic sizes, usually within 24 hours, any Monday through Friday. Find out more by calling Thompson Sanitation at 845-796-1032 to reserve your roll-off by speaking with their knowledgeable and pleasant staff for detailed information. Thompson Sanitation provides residential curbside pickup, garbage and recycling services with monthly, quarterly, as well as annual billing options. Call Thompson Sanitation. Ask about their special offers and senior citizens rates. Thompson Sanitation, 845-796-1032. Thompson Sanitation, managing your disposal needs since 1986.
Thunder. The opinions expressed by the host of this program don't necessarily reflect those of Bold Gold Media Group, Thunder 102, its management, staff, and sponsors.
Hello there. Welcome back to Curly's commentary on Thunder 102. I'm Steve Curlander, and we're discussing the jail situation in Sullivan County with our sheriff and undersheriff. One more issue. Is it important to have the right contractor in terms of building a jail?
Absolutely. We're looking to do the jail now. People locally probably remember the problems with Sullivan West, the problems with the Liberty Middle School. I know that when the roof leaked, the windows leaked, they got mold in the basement, and then the contractor went out of business. There were jails that have been built that have come in way over budget or unable to be completed because there weren't enough funds left to do it. Built substandard where things had to be corrected. When the legislature first looked at companies to do this project, their goal was, because of these failures in the past of other projects, to find a company that had a record, a pristine record, of completing projects on time, quality work, and on budget.
This was a few years ago, though, right?
Yeah, this was they picked the company just before I came into office. That was a process that started before I was in. And they picked LaBella Associates. There were, I believe, two or three other companies. All of them were excellent companies, but these guys, I guess, rose to the top. And they were chosen by the legislature to do the work. But the premise was not to be one of these counties or one of these municipalities that built a building and wound up with all kinds of overruns, all kinds of mechanical problems, plant problems. And I think they made a good choice. These guys have a reputation statewide. They do a lot of work in New York, and their quality.
So, you know, even if they're a little more expensive, they're the right guys.
Well, it's hard to quantify if they are more expensive. Mm-hmm. They brought in another company that was brought in by somebody in the county for us to look at. And before they started, they said, we'll save you $30, $40 million. Well, of course, we're all interested. If we can cut this project cost down considerably, we're all over it. It's about taxpayer money. Mm-hmm. But as we're going forward, we have to make sure all the numbers are real and we're comparing apples to apples. The jail has to be functional. It's got to be safe for our workers. It's got to be safe for the inmates. It's got to be where if there is a problem, we can handle it, not where we're cramped and can't get things in that we need. The design has to meet the approval of the Correction Commission. And this other company has worked up some proposals, and they've tried to keep the number down, but at the risk of design, a poor design. And they're having now to beef that up a little bit. Their numbers are going to come in higher than what they'd like. And I think the numbers for the company we currently have been exaggerated. The $80 million number was thrown around. I believe the number was $74 to start. And that included the purchase of the property, which was like $2 million. So it's like really $72. And we have to push this company to come up with numbers now where we can make a direct comparison and find out, because their square footage, their estimates for what they're going to pay per square foot is almost identical. So they're selling us less square footage, and we have to find out if that less square footage is okay, whether we can function within it and meets our needs, and will the Correction Commission approve that? So we're in the process now, everybody, the legislature, us, there is a jail committee, are all looking very hard to make sure that we make a proper choice. But when we make that choice, we also have to not forget the lessons of the past, that we do it with a company that has a pristine record and can be done as advertised. So we'll continue scrutinizing this and try to make sure the right choice is made, or at least our recommendation is the right recommendation.
This is Steve Curlander, and we're talking to Sheriff Mike Schiff and Under Sheriff Eric Tribodi on Thunder 102 on Curly's commentary. You know, one thing I want to talk about briefly, and we're almost done with the show, is I want to observe something that, you know, when I was a county legislator, the biggest priority was public safety, public safety and filling potholes. I mean, I think that's the two basic major things that any politician in any level of government's got to deal with. And, you know, no matter the politics involved, when the sheriff came into our legislature, he basically, you know, he got what he wanted. I mean, because it had to be done. I remember like Sheriff Joe Wasser was a Democrat. He campaigned against me. And, you know, when he came in after the election, that didn't matter. You know, if he told me he needed personnel or he needed funding, it was basically, you know, it was legitimate. And I gave it to him. I gave him my vote. Tell me what's going on now in terms of manpower in your department.
We're way short. We're way down in manpower. And it's funny you say that. The Board of Supervisors has been very supportive of us with the manpower. Of course, the legislature is the one that has to pay for it with their budget. But
the supervisors have legitimate concerns. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, most of them have the patrol in their town as their primary source of law enforcement.
Yes. We, back in 08, when the bottom fell out of the economy, were asked to cut. In over several years, we cut through attrition five positions from the road patrol, which it was difficult before. It made it hard. Then we were asked to consolidate with 911 for a money savings. The county manager at the time estimated that to be between $250,000 and $300,000. We said, we can't ignore that. What do we have to do? Well, the estimate is to sit desk for us is a full post, 24/7. Every day there's somebody there every shift. The industry standard is five and a half positions to fill one post that's 24/7. So through attrition, we gave up five more bodies.
So you're down 10
for
guys?
A total of 10. Yeah, almost 25% of our patrol force.
So we gave up the other five bodies, and we were just getting to the point where 911 consolidation was getting off the ground and doing our dispatch. And then the legislature decided to deconsolidate it. They didn't want it to be under me. I said that was fine. It's a lot of work for me. It was a lot of extra work for 911. But what I did ask was, I said, I need the five bodies back. Give me the five bodies, and we'll move forward. And everybody's happy.
And to clarify, by deconsolidating 911, it meant we had to reopen our desk and take a deputy off the road so he could sit at our desk and answer the phone.
So, in effect, not only was I 10 people down, but now one of the people I had remaining had to sit desk. So, in effect, it's 15 people that aren't on the road driving a car.
So it's basically five deputies that are needed a shift at this point. Would it be like five a shift?
No. He's saying a 24-hour post. Okay. By when you do an industry standard staffing analysis, a 24-hour post is about five and a half bodies.
Okay.
So we gave up those bodies when 911, when we consolidated with 911. When we deconsolidated, those bodies were not returned to us. We now had to reopen our desk, take somebody off the road, and have them answer the phone. So that's how we're down 10 bodies altogether.
Now, you know, I was reading that you guys just busted a big pot house last week. I mean, there's a heroin epidemic going on. There's a burglary epidemic in the county. Last show, I was talking to John Riegler, who's the union leader in Monticello, and we looked at the numbers in Monticello when they were fully staffed. I mean, they have the same problem.
Yeah.
When they were fully staffed, their crime statistics were down to the national average, and now they're twice the average. And so it showed to me that the more bodies you have, the better and safer the public is.
Correct. I mean, there's a lot of shifts. We've got two people out there covering 1,000 square miles. And recently we've had several incidents when that happened. There was a 911 pole. Our guys were the only guys pulling up. They were the only two guys working. And they show up and there's a guy there with a shotgun. They were able to handle it with nobody being hurt. But
it's definitely a safety issue for the officers.
For the officers and for the public. When they call for help and they need help, we have 1,000 square miles to cover.
We're the size of Rhode Island, right?
Yes.
If we're starting from Monticello and you're in Fremont, you're waiting. We need people out on the road in their sectors so that they can respond quickly to complaints, because some of these complaints can be life or death, even a car accident if you're injured. If there's a heart attack and we have to respond with our defibrillators, whatever it might be, minutes, seconds count. and we just don't have the manpower. We don't have the people. And another thing that contributed to the manpower, the state police were covering the schools with school resource. They pulled out. We had to step in. I don't think it would be responsible to leave our kids, the schools, without somebody in there. So we have three people in a school resource group that are split up. We do get money reimbursement for that, but it takes up three more bodies from the road patrol. But
now, recently, the county passed a budget with a very small increase to stay under the tax cap. And, you know, I came when I was a legislator. Again, I have to refer to what, you know, my experience. We did a number of zeros, and I thought those were terrible mistakes at the time. Because, first of all, I don't think the tax cap's realistic, especially when the mandates are in existence and the retirement alone makes up the difference in the 2%. But, you know, when this latest budget, do you think they should have increased taxes by another percent to pay for some of this need for law enforcement?
That's a decision they have to make. All I can deal with is – I'm not a legislator. I don't legislate the money. All I can deal with is public safety, the safety of our members being on the road – and the safety of the public, and we're very understaffed. Where that money comes from, is it feasible? That part I don't do. I know this legislature was handed a pretty tough hand on taxes.
They were a lot better. I mean, yeah, they've increased their reserves at this point.
They're ahead. They're pulling themselves out.
But, you know, that's what reserves are for, though. I mean, again, I think law enforcement's a total number one priority.
Well, Steve, it's important to understand that the road patrol budget is only 2.5% of the entire county budget. And we did a quick analysis of the current tax levy. We found out that to add one new deputy would cost each household $1.85 a year.
So, you know, I've also read that there's a grassroots effort now being led to what's the next step? Are you going to be approaching the legislature again to increase the patrol?
Well, several of them have reached out for me on numbers and what can we do, and I've given them my feedback. I'll be meeting with a couple of them tomorrow again to give them some numbers. I'll see what they're able to do. It's still got to pass a vote. They still need five people to say we're going to do something about this and add more people. But it is imperative. We have employees that put their life on the line every day, and they don't question that. It's fine.
And it takes a while to get somebody in a position, too. They have to go to school. I mean, it's not that easy just to go hire them off the street, right?
But it's tough on them to be out there putting their life on the line and maybe not even having backup that's close by. They need to know there are people out there that in an emergency, they're going to have somebody respond.
So it's a very serious situation.
Yeah. I've been out there. I work for the state police. It's very comparable. Zone 1, Troop F, we covered Sullivan County. That's what the sheriff's office covers. And when you're up in Fremont or Long Eddy and something bad's happening, backup can be a long way away, but it's nice to know somebody's coming.
You could also maybe target the burglaries more, the drug, you know, more with task force and that type of thing.
Well, absolutely. That's an important point. You know, we've been lucky, we've caught a lot of burglars this year, but because we had diminished manpower, it took that much longer. So there were that many more people who were victimized until we caught these people.
And, you know, I know I lived in Rock Hill for a while. It's a very serious situation in Rock Hill.
And incidentally, that's where that grassroots effort is emanating from. They've just had enough down there in Rock Hill.
And our problem, we have to look at our deputies, look them in the eye, and know we're putting them out there without proper backup and proper coverage. And the people that are getting burglarized and the people that aren't getting a quick response, we have to look them in the eye and explain to them that it's a manpower issue. We want to be there, and we can't.
I think that we're going to wrap it up now. Michelle's giving me the evil eye. It's time to go. Thank you for listening to Curly's commentary tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show, and please listen to the next show. Thank you.
It's another winter in Thunder Country. Keep updated on the latest delays and cancellations with Thunder 102 Storm Tracker. Get up-to-the-minute information on schools, businesses, organizations, and events. Thunder 102 Storm Tracker, brought to you in part by Middletown Medical and Liberty Medical Group, has urgent care centers in Middletown and Ellenville. Call 342-4774 or visit middletownmedical.com. Middletown Medical and Liberty Medical Group, working together to provide you with high-quality health care. Your source for information on air, online, on your cell phone. Thunder 102.
Roscoe Beer Company. Do you know how good it is at the end of the day when you come out of the woods and finally have a chance to sit and enjoy a nice cold Roscoe beer? It's good.
Your hometown Roscoe Beer Company's Trout Town American Amber is a well-balanced, easy-drinking ale. Ask for Roscoe Beer at your favorite grocery store, bar, tavern, or restaurant. Brewed with mountain crisp water and in the clear mountain air, specifically for those of us that enjoy a good, refreshing beer after a day in the great outdoors. Check out the Facebook and webpage of the Roscoe Beer Company for store hours and tasting schedule. The Roscoe Beer Company store is located on 145 Rockland Road in Roscoe, New York, Sullivan County's last frontier. Quickway exit 94, just a few minutes from wherever you are.
Look no further. Look no longer. You are home. Announcing the grand opening of Sullivan County's first full-service luxury residential community, the Sullivan Regency. Located on West Broadway in Monticello, the Sullivan Regency is a $20 million development filled with luxury condos that have custom granite counters, vaulted ceilings, and private spacious balconies. Key building amenities include a full-time doorman, 24-hour monitored security, custom designed and constructed indoor and outdoor pool, designer fitness center, and an interactive game room. You have to see it to believe it. Call Charles Brodsky at 914-490-3433. That's 914-490-3433. Or visit SullivanRegency.com. Look no further. Look no longer. You are home. The Sullivan Regency.